Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we are going to be talking all things accounting. And we're going to call this our Accounting 101 class. So we're going to talk about bookkeeping. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk about what you need to know about starting and running your business from an accounting perspective. And we're really fortunate to have in the studio with us today, Tony Pandicia from Langdon & Company, CPAs. And Tony's going to help us walk through the different implications. And my experience with my clients is a lot of them, Tony, treat accounting like math. It's add this, subtract this, and you're going to get a number, and that's going to be a profit or a loss. But it's much more complex than that, and kind of walk us into the complexities of accounting and what we need to know.
Sure, Lee, and thank you for having me. When you say this is Accounting 101, and then we're going to walk through some of these things, that's exactly what it is. It's kind of a travel or a journey. When you talk about accounting, there is a little bit of math involved, then there's balancing, and then there's planning, and then there's tax issues and legal issues. There's so many things that kind of stem off from just the basic understanding of how do I keep track of my business.
So day one, we're starting a new business, and we have to pick a legal entity and understand the tax entity options. So if I'm starting a business, I do nothing else, and it's just me, I'm a sole proprietor. What kind of tax implications do I have from that?
Well, from the tax side, what happens as a sole proprietor is that you're going to be reporting on your own personal tax return the net income of whatever activities you've generated during the year. And it's what's typically called a Schedule C, because that's the name of the form within your Form 1040 that you would complete. And it's really just an income statement. And you have to choose the accounting method with which you will follow the filing, and that would be the accrual method or the cash method of the accounting.
What does that mean?
And what that refers to is the different ways that you're going to recognize your revenue and your expenses, the timing. So an accrual method picks up most of the income and expenses in advance of you paying them. They're recognized as you either invoice or you receive an invoice. Whereas on the cash method, you would only recognize activity as you actually put the cash in the bank or pay the cash out of the bank. So on an accrual method, that's where you have accounts receivable and accounts payable issues. And on the cash method, you would only recognize items as they go through your bank account.
So I'm a sole proprietor. I decided to take on a partner. How different is that from being just a simple sole proprietor when it comes to tax and other issues?
Well, when you're a sole proprietor and you figure that you're more of a grassroots business owner now, you just have to report on your Schedule C of your 1040. The next level, which when you take on a partner and you want to actually have some type of a legal arrangement between you and your partner, you're going to now involve the Secretary of State's office of whichever state you're operating in, and you're going to form a new legal entity, a separate identity from yourself. And if it's a two-owner partnership or a limited liability company, which are, again, they're two different types of companies, or it could be a corporation, they all have different legal ramifications and legal requirements in order to get set up. And then from a tax side, what it does is it moves your reporting off of your personal tax return onto now the business will have its own tax return.
But it doesn't necessarily, so like an LLC or an S-Corp election, that still flows through ultimately to pay the taxes on your personal return, correct?
That's correct. So that gets into, again, your decision of what kind of entity you would like to be. If you choose what are called pass-through entities like an S corporation or a limited liability company or a partnership, you're going to report on the business's tax return all of the activities, and the net number that's left over, whether it's an income or a loss for the year, will then be divided up amongst the owners, and they report that personally on their personal tax return. If you're a standard or old-fashioned or C corporation entity, then that will all be contained on its own business tax return, and the taxes will be paid by the entity.
So are there advantages to one over the other for a small business or any size business?
Well, there's definitely there's advantages and disadvantages, and it kind of depends on the industry you're in, the type of growth that you are planning on, the people or other owners that you're intending to have involved in the business, the type of financing or other funding that you're looking to acquire. So there's really not one fit for all. You almost have to be a little bit subjective and customize your decision to exactly what you're trying to do.
So tell me three things you would ask a client to help them make that decision.
Well, a lot of times I have clients come in that are looking to start a business for the very first time, and that's exactly what I do, is I ask them first, what is your goal here? If you've always been working for someone else or employed by someone else, and now you've decided to break out onto your own, what exactly was your intention? What did you think you were going to be able to do here? Is it making a big profit, making a contribution into society, build something for your family, your future? What exactly is your big picture plan? And then from that, we can start to tailor what your needs are going to be as far as choosing a business entity, choosing an accounting system, deciding what types of other factors would have to be involved in your business, like the people you may have to hire and contracts that you may have to have in place, and it just goes on and on from there. But pretty much I'd like to know first what is it that you were intending to do, because sometimes the answer is, you know, this may not be a good business opportunity. Maybe we have to change what you're intending to do a little bit so that you become a more efficient or better fit for a business. And then from that, there's other questions from, did you understand how much money it's going to take to get started? So if you're funding this yourself, or you're looking to obtain outside funding, have you set up some kind of a plan for where that money's going to come from? And then lastly, once you're able to have that money, that startup capital that you're going to need, what are you going to be doing with it? Do you have a forecast, even just a rough one, that's going to give you some kind of a guide? And certainly me, if I'm going to be helping you or my firm, we want to have a guide as to where are you going to be using the money? How are you going to be incurring expenses? And is each expense measured such that it's going to give you some kind of a return?
Well, one of the challenges people dealing with accounting or numbers is that frequently they're intimidated by that. They don't quite want to put down on the paper just what it is they're thinking or try to quantify it, because it might give them a different answer than what they thought it was going to be. So do you have a process for helping them do a forecast or a budget? I know I do in my business, and it's always challenging to get somebody to take it from that plan in their head and quantify it and walk them through that process.
Well, that's absolutely true. Some people have more of a concept than they do a good plan in mind, and I think that with my clients, we've been successful in driving that concept to the paper to say, look, we need to at least at a high level have some kind of idea. How much do you think you're going to sell in year one? And if year one sales were X, do we think we're going to be able to double that in year two? And then we can help you try and identify what will it take for you to double the sales in year two, and what are all the different things that go into it. And really, once you get the foundation, whether it's going to be a spreadsheet or a software program that'll help you create this forecast and then look back at it so you can look at variances between actual and what you forecasted, it really starts to click in for business owners. Is it now they really have a grasp on, well, I know how much money it costs me to open up the office and keep the lights on now, so I know how much I have to make each month in order to continue in business.
Right.
And then I'm going to need more money if I want to grow the business or get into a new business line or hire more people. So how is it that I'm going to now generate that additional money?
I remember working early on with a client, and they wanted to be a $1 million business. I said, do you know how many customers that is? And they're like, what do you mean? I said, are you selling something at $10,000, at $1,000, or at $1? Because it's a whole different scale as to how much activity you have to generate that business, and how much of that money do you keep, and all those inputs that go into that. So if we want to look at starting our business and we're starting from scratch, or maybe we've already started a business but we're kind of struggling right now, What kind of things do you run into with your clients that you have to fix, or that are their biggest challenges or problems when they're getting started? Can you give me a couple?
Sure. And this gets back to the accounting, is if they have not been with me since inception, there's usually some questions as to where exactly did the money go? What kind of books and records were you maintaining before we sat down? So that's always a danger when the money is – the bank account now has dwindled, and even though there's some sales coming in, there's just not enough money to continue running the company the way it had been. So we have to go back and look at, well, let's try and identify where all the expenses were, because if you're not sure what you've been paying, then we certainly can't help you fix for the future or look at forecasting for the future. So that's always a big issue. And then with the clients that I do have from inception, where we are able to put a good plan and a forecast in place, the key is to then monitor it periodically. Sometimes it's every 2 weeks, every month, every quarter, to then go back and discuss, well, remember we said that you were planning on having 100,000 of sales in the first 2 months, but sales only turned out to be 50,000. So because of that, that's why we have less money in the bank right now. What happened? So can you tell me exactly what happened? Did we have bad weather? Did we have bad marketing? Did something occur that you didn't anticipate, so that now we have to change our forecast going forward?
So what I'm hearing with you're not really the traditional CPA firm, because you guys aren't just concerned with the debits and the credits and the bookkeeping. You're doing a much broader consultative perspective. So kind of give me a little bit of your background. Let's kind of step back to that and what Langdon does that's different.
Sure. We're a 25-person firm, and we don't deal with any publicly traded companies or SEC type of work, which means that any other business that's owned by a family or just a under 75 owners, what's called a closely held business, or even down to a sole proprietor, those are the types of businesses we work with. And in many instances, it's dealing with a lot of very smart people that just don't have the financial background. So we're doing a lot of teaching for them, as well as helping guide them through all of the pitfalls of getting started, growing, expanding, merging, and then ultimately retiring or passing the business on to the next generation. And when you have to try and cover all of those types of topics, it's more than just putting the numbers in a column. We actually have to become partners with our clients, so that when they have a question, sometimes in the middle of the night they wake up and they say, I don't know if I told the CPAs I'm planning on setting up an annual conference and we're going to have new sales line in 6 months. I really want to know what that means. And so this way they can get on the phone or email or text us, and we can respond to some of these questions just as if we're part of the office on a daily basis. And that's really where a firm like mine comes into play, is we're able to form these relationships so that we can be relied upon as a resource.
So I like to tell my clients, you need to talk to two people really early and really often, your accountant and your attorney. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to start talking about some of those things we need to tell our accountants and our attorneys early and often and ask the questions. So we're going to go to a break, and we're going to listen to Making Money by Ben Rector. And we'll be right back. WCOM is proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina. You can support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina by volunteering your time, donating a one-time gift, a recurring gift, or through workplace giving. You can also participate in fundraising events. For more information about Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org or call them at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474. Believe it or not, we need to start thinking about the holiday season and our year-end giving. And the Ronald McDonald House of Durham has published their holiday wish list. For the families, they like to see these things delivered by December 17th. They're looking for like $10 gift cards to Target, Walmart, gas stations, or any of those places that will help them with their needs while they're visiting their children and they're taking care of things. They need new and unwrapped toys for infants or teenagers. They need stocking stuffers like body lotion, perfume, cologne, journals, socks, just all those little comforts of home that they're going to be missing. You can sponsor a stay for a family for $10 for one night, $70 for one week, or $300 for one month. So when you're planning your year-end giving, and when you're thinking about all those holiday gifts that you're getting for friends and family, think of the Ronald McDonald House of Durham and include them in your holiday shopping. Well, Tony, let's go back to our conversation. We were talking about all the complexities of starting and running a business. And one of the things I see with clients as they come in is they frequently don't maximize their use of their accounting software, whether that's QuickBooks, a spreadsheet, or whatever. What do you see and what tips and advice can you give to businesses to get the most out of the software?
Well, Lee, a lot of times what happens is they don't understand the capabilities of the software in addition to not necessarily understanding the accounting concepts. So having a good CPA or other financial resource that can either train them or actually perform this service for them so that they can understand how to extract information, run reports, as well as keep things balanced in the books and measuring it against other industry resources to see how they fit in the marketplace against competition and other companies like theirs. That's really, really important. There are so many real helpful tools out there, that are computer-based, and if you're not sure how to use them or what information is supposed to get into them, there are a lot of different ways that you can find out. And again, that comes back to your relationship with your professionals. You know, I think we talked, you mentioned before how important it is to have a good attorney and to have a good CPA involved right from the start. And a good CPA is someone that's going to either be able to plug in and provide you with a lot of answers about your accounting package, your accounting software, or at least find you a new accounting package that's more user-friendly for you.
So I always see clients saying, well, I have a great accounting system. It's QuickBooks. And yet when they go in there and they say, well, let me do anything I want. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the problem. It will let you do anything you want. So how do you help them set up policies and procedures or training so that they use it properly once you've given them the guidance and the selection?
Well, that's exactly it, is to set up some policies and procedures to say, we want to keep our dates when you're entering information. We want to keep them in an organized manner where once you close a month out, for instance, once you've stopped entering information for a particular month, you don't go back later on if you missed something or forgot something and change the numbers that you had already arrived at when you closed the books for the month, for instance. There's always ways to try and recognize everything properly without trying to go back and use your eraser and change things that have already been decided upon or resolved. And a lot of software packages don't have that safeguard built in, so you either have to find an advanced feature amongst them or create those manual procedures for our clients, particularly when they're just getting started out. The more sophisticated accounting packages, and this is usually when a business grows to a size where that type of startup level QuickBooks, like you say, they've outgrown it because their business has become a little bit too sophisticated. There are other packages out there that are higher level that already have those controls in place, and then it's just a matter of explaining to the clients how to use them.
So when you're sitting there with the client, they've come in, and let's say they haven't been aware of all the tax-type things they need to do. Let's go through some of those things like privilege taxes, sales and use taxes, payroll taxes, and kind of familiarize everybody with things beyond the income taxes that are out there that they need to think about.
Well, particularly in North Carolina, there's the state income tax, both at the business level and the personal level. Then there's the county business property taxes, which any business that has fixed assets in on their books that they use in their business is required to report this to their county. Then there's sales taxes that most businesses that deal in hard goods and certain enumerated services, and it's an area that's rapidly expanding in Raleigh as they look for other ways to raise revenues. They're expanding what is subject to sales tax, so that's becoming a bigger component of many businesses. Understanding what needs to be filed, what needs to be paid, when they need to be done, and then how do you react or respond when there's an inquiry made by any one of the taxing authorities to any of these filings and payments that you've made, because most of the tax authorities are starting to step up their scrutinizing and audit work because, again, they're looking for revenues that haven't been paid over. So in order to make sure that you have good compliance, you keep good records, and you understand in the business that I'm in, typically what are the taxes that I have to be aware of.
So frequently we make purchases online, and a lot of times those sales taxes are not collected. How do we know where and who we're supposed to pay sales tax to on transactions that we originate over the internet and come here to North Carolina or maybe to one of our locations in another state?
Boy, that's a really good question, Lee. And again, it's something that is really getting more and more attention by not just North Carolina, but most of the 50 states because of the proliferation of business on the internet. Typically, you can look where you reside on that Department of Revenue's website. So North Carolina has a pretty well set up a website where you can get these questions answered if you're not sure. But ideally, if you're purchasing something that sales tax was not included on the invoice from the distributor or the supplier, you need to know that if you're based in North Carolina, you're going to be responsible for paying the tax that North Carolina would have charged if you had purchased it here. And when you don't, then you're subject to audit and penalties and et cetera to make up that tax. If you and to even make things a little bit more scary is if you do not regularly file sales tax returns because you're in a service business that otherwise you wouldn't be filing sales tax returns, when you purchase items out of state where tax wasn't charged, if you don't file a tax return and report that tax that is owed that wasn't charged by the other state, the state of North Carolina can come in at any time because there's no statute of limitations when you have not filed a tax return at all. And I've had clients or calls from prospective clients where they've been contacted. They didn't even know that they had, this is what's called a use tax, they didn't know they had a use tax liability for purchasing something from a out-of-state either office supplier or equipment supplier that didn't charge them the tax, and it could be 5, 6, 7 years ago. They may not even have the records to refute the claim, but the state of North Carolina is now assessing them for the full sales tax plus penalties and interest.
So one of the things I see with clients and prospective clients is that they overlook property tax. So they're used to maybe not paying tax on their personal computer at home, and they don't think about when they have 6 computers sitting in their business that that's an asset and it's subject to property tax. So let's talk a little bit about property taxes and the implications. And there are audits for that, and it's another great place that the state looks for money and downtimes.
Well, that's absolutely true, and you're right. We have a lot of clients that form businesses or have started new types of businesses where it's asset intensive, and those types of taxes are now due to whatever the county of residence is. And the interesting thing is, as long as it remains on your books, even if you've written off the asset entirely, or you may not be using the asset as much as you did when you first purchased it, the county is still going to include it amongst your taxable assets. And there's a filing that has to be maintained every year. And then they will, just like your personal, your principal residence taxes are levied every summer, the counties will then send out the invoices to you based on the prior report that you filed earlier that year and the mill rate or the tax rate that they've set up for that particular year.
So typically right now I'm seeing clients that are coming in. They've been in business about 3 years, didn't know anything about property taxes or sales and use tax, and the auditors are in. So what kind of strategies can they have to mitigate and minimize that issue, get cleaned up, and not get a visit from the auditors every year hereafter?
Well, there's a couple of things there in that question, Lee's. Certainly the first thing you have to do is if you don't already have a CPA, you need to call one. Because if you're being audited, you never want to go into it yourself. As innocent as you may think the questions are, or and as good as you think your records are, you really need to have someone who's done this before and interacted with the tax authorities to be on your side. And a lot of times it's a smooth process, but there are occasions where if you had the right professional representation by your side or in front of you on this, you're able to really mitigate and limit the potential exposure that your business could be under. The next thing is always to remember that it's not personal. The tax authorities right now are under a lot of pressure to raise revenues and identify revenues that they think certain businesses and taxpayers might have omitted, again, innocently. But they have a job to do, and so you don't want to make it a personal issue. You want to be able to provide as much information as you can in the right format. And again, the CPA representative is someone who's going to help you answer the questions without giving away too much information.
That's great. So, Tony, we're going to take another break. We're going to try Making Money Again with Ben Rector and some other music. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the top five business issues for small businesses related to accounting.
Making money, it isn't easy, and it sure won't make you happy. So I think it's funny we're so concerned with making money, and money won't keep folks from grieving, and it won't stop love from leaving. So here's my two cents. What's the use in making money? And I know that life ain't cheap, and not all good things are free. But there is no enough and no too much, and it seems so strange to me. I just think it's funny we're so concerned with making money. I make my living singing love songs that I made up, 'cause I love songs, but folks believe them, so I'm receiving paper money. Don't get me wrong, I love my lady, and I probably wouldn't trade her, but life's no better with debts or debtors making money. And I know that life ain't cheap, and not all good things are free. But there is no enough and no too much, and it seems so strange to me. I just think it's funny we're so concerned with making money. Everybody's got their reasons. Final wines or fairer seasons. But if we're truthful, we know we're fools for making money.
All right, I finally got that working correctly. I want to thank our underwriters today, the Forest Firm, sophisticated legal counsel with customized solutions to meet your organization's needs. Full-service corporate legal resources focused on the lawyer-client relationship. Learn more about the Forest Firm at www.forestfirm.com. We also want to thank Harrington Bank. That's your community bank here in Carrboro and Chapel Hill. Harrington Bank provides a unique and enjoyable banking experience. Harrington Bank is your neighbor, so get to know them at www.bankatharrington.com. We're also thanking IWP Photography and Video. They capture the important moments of your lives, specializing in events, weddings, and more. For information about IWP Photography services, visit their website at www.iwpphotography.com. And finally, we'd like to thank Focus Resources. Get practical advice on how to start, fund, grow, and run your business. Focus Resources also specializes in government grants and contracts. For more information, visit them at www.focusresourcesinc.com. Well, before the break, we were talking with Tony about the issues that we see in businesses. And I want to ask Tony now to come back into the conversation and let's talk about five things I see consistently with small businesses. Number one, they either don't record their accounts receivable or they don't follow up on getting paid. So how prevalent is that in your experience, and what kind of recommendations can you give to clients to make sure they stay current and see the importance of staying current?
Well, it gets back to the plan or the forecast that they have in place. If they expected to make a certain dollar amount in the first quarter or the first year and those dollars are not being realized, the first thing we want to look at, is it because the collections on your sales has been slow, or that you made sales to customers that are just not going to pay you, so you have a long outstanding receivable that will never be collected. And those are the kinds of things that we need to identify as quickly as possible. Is one, you don't want to continue a relationship with a ongoing client that's a slow payer that you cannot collect from. And two, you want to make sure that if you are going to if your receivables are going to be collected at a slow pace, you need to make alternate arrangements to be able to fund your operating needs in the short term until that money comes in. So, again, going back to when you start the business and you start the year and you look ahead at not only what kind of sales I'm going to have, but at what rate am I going to be able to collect on those sales so I have money to run the business, we need to be looking at that every day. The business owner really needs to understand how his daily receivables are coming in and how much cash flow he has, and then, or she, and then looking at the end of the month, how did the month go and where do I think this is going to be next month? And that's where you start to identify the problems with either slow paying or no paying, or even if you've missed recording some items, and that gets back to your accounting system. How good are you at tracking your sales and tracking your collections?
And doesn't that in part come from an underlying issue of what kind of credit terms and background and all that kind of stuff you've done on your customers and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. That's certainly a consideration, is the client acceptance or customer acceptance practice that you want to have in place. You know, initially, when you start, particularly a startup business, you may be thinking, well, I'm going to take any sale that I can get. But ultimately, if it's a sale that doesn't pay you, that it better be a really good opportunity for promotion and community benefit, that you realize something out of it because you're not getting paid on it. So definitely you need to understand who are the people that you're providing goods and services to, and if they're not the type of customer that you want to be in business with, then you need to be ready to make those decisions either before doing the work or very soon thereafter.
So I'm kind of going to harp back, and the listeners probably know this because I always want to cover the point from a couple ways. If we're doing business and all of us kind of get into that e-commerce thing at some point, we either provide services. We might be located here in North Carolina, but someone contacts us from out of state and we provide a service, or we sell something. We have to understand the sales and use tax implications for being a seller, a purveyor of goods and services. And how do we do that? How do we make a decision, and how do we set up to minimize the number of tax entities that we get nexus that we are responsible for filing these returns in?
Well, and that's you just hit on it, is the term nexus. Is you need to understand in the transaction that you're about to undergo, are you creating a nexus with another jurisdiction, whether it's a local or another bordering or non-bordering state? The type of service or good that you're providing, if you are not collecting and invoicing for the proper tax, what can happen is you can actually pay tax to the wrong jurisdiction. And whereas if you're a North Carolina-based company and you're collecting a North Carolina sales tax for a service or good that was provided to someone out of state, the state of North Carolina will be very happy with you because you're providing them with some more revenues. It'll be the other state, when they come audit you, they're going to say, well, I'm very sorry, but according to our law, you really needed to collect and remit tax to us, and you're going to have to pay us now and try to go back to North Carolina and get a refund. So we try to identify as early in the game as possible with our business owners and management teams what the type of transactions they're going to be engaging in and whether they're going to cross city or state lines where there is a potential tax to pay, and help them identify, okay, on your invoicing, you're going to need in your accounting system a way to identify those sales that are going to these places, invoice it properly, collect it properly, and then turn it over to that jurisdiction in a timely manner, also filing whatever paperwork needs to get done. And a lot of this really gets back to the organization phase, is having a good CPA that understands e-commerce and nexus can really help you get this done right from the start.
So let's say we're running our business here in North Carolina and we decide to open another office in Oklahoma. So is there an implication for the business? We're still the same legal entity. We just happen to have an office in Oklahoma. For the business with filing income tax returns in Oklahoma, sales and use tax, what all will we have to think about if we start opening in another location in another state?
Well, that's exactly it. You probably have to register to do business in that other state, and that would be getting in contact with that state's Secretary of State's office. Then you may or may not need to register with their Department of Revenue, which is usually the tax collecting authority of that state. And they're going to assign you a number, and they're going to want to make sure that you are current on all of your filings. And once you have qualified to do business after working with both of those agencies, then you're going to have to start tracking that location's income and expenses so that you can not only report properly the net income that might be due, the tax might be due on that net income for that jurisdiction, but also what are the particular sales tax requirements for that jurisdiction, because they could be vastly different than what you're used to in your home state.
So how much taxes we're paying, we're managing this process, we need to know how much cash we have coming and going and from where and what we're using it from. So we're actually talking about needing cash flow to keep the business up and running, working capital, to pay our employees, to buy goods and service, to pay the rent, all of those kind of things. But how does the new business or the business we're planning with understand how long it's going to take? So I hire somebody today, I have to pay them payroll. Let's say we're a service company, we'll kind of keep it simple. And they're going to go out and they're going to work for a client, and we're going to bill for those hours. And let's say I give the customer 30-day terms. So I've paid my employee, he goes out and works, and now I'm setting in, let's say it's December, we're here in November, And so 6 weeks has gone by and I've had all this money going out, but I still haven't gotten paid. So what are my options for finding working capital sources if that's going to be my consistent cash conversion cycle from having a customer, paying an expense, and then getting paid?
Sure. Well, depending on the type of business you're in, the experience that you've had, or the work history, the track record that you have, there's lending sources. There's traditional lending sources through banks. And again, depending on the type of business you are, you may have to personally guarantee it as the owner, some financing that the bank could provide you. You could look to factor your receivables or sell your receivables. There are companies out there that deal specifically with specific industries. It can get really finite, but there are companies out there that will loan on your receivables, and they'll take a fee, but at least this way it provides you with working capital so that you can then go and pursue your next opportunities. And you just need to look at what is the cost of outsourcing, so to speak, the collection of your receivables versus not getting paid at all. So there are a lot of good opportunities to look at in order to do that. And then there's also looking at other ways to capitalize the business, like maybe it's time to bring on a partner or look at venture capital, or, you know, as part of your growth and exit strategies, are you looking at other buyouts or mergers and acquisitions that will provide not only funding but also a way for you to take back some money off the table or even sell out?
So the area we're in, we have a lot of technology startups. We have a lot of different companies that go out and they get their research funded with government funds. And my clients get a lot of small business innovation research grants and things of that nature. Once we start taking other people's money and bringing in investors, or we're going out and raising funds, or we're doing, you know, getting lending from a bank, we start having to produce financial statements, real financial statements for people to look at. And how big of a transition do you see that with your clients whenever, whatever the motivation, an investor comes in or they're having to give their financial statements every month to a bank? I know on my end, when we have to do it with the government, those auditors are, you know, it's not personal, but it's frequently not friendly either. And so they come in. And so what kind of things can we spotlight that we can think in our business processes, our business structure, and our planning right up front to get it right and to minimize the effort and the cost to us to doing business and getting those audits and things?
Well, Lee, that's a common misconception, I guess, amongst business owners or people that are getting into business for the first time, is understanding what does it mean to have a financial statement. Even though we've been talking about, for most of today, preparing your own books and records in a computerized accounting package, that's not necessarily a financial statement that an outside party is going to accept as the true reflection of what your business has done. I mean, those are what we would call your internal financial statements. And then what you need to normally provide to either a lender or other parties that have some type of interest in your business is what's called a certified financial statement. And that's where a CPA firm that is credentialed in performing an audit of your financial statements will come in and perform lots of different analysis and reconciliations and reviews in order to provide a printed financial statement with an opinion on it as to how compliant your practices are against what the industry standards are. These are what's called generally accepted accounting principles. But the key being is that you are going to now have something that an outside party knows has been scrutinized for whatever the rules and regulations in the accounting industry are, and you're either in compliance or not in compliance, and that gives them a lot of faith and credibility in making lending decisions. So that's where those types of services is where you would see a lot of fees now being generated by a CPA firm, but it is a necessary service when you have either grant money or a bank lending or outside investors that need to have these certified financials. The key to try and keep a lid on the costs is, again, how good are your practices throughout the year internally? How good are you keeping your books and records so that when an auditor, when the CPA comes in to audit your books once a year, do they have to do a lot of cleanup, or are things readily available and clearly understood in your books and records so that they can then compare and analyze them against what the industry standards are?
So if you had to make four recommendations to every business out there in startup mode, or they've just started and they're struggling, what four things would you be telling them to look at now to change their business for 2014?
Well, certainly one of the things we're spending a lot of time talking to our clients about is the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, and just understanding, even if you're a small business, how does the new law affect us? It may be an indirect or a direct impact. There are 17 new taxes that are being levied as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and not necessarily on every business and every taxpayer, but what the law is doing is it's creating some additional costs or some additional filing requirements. So it's really important. A lot of them are kicking in with the close of 2013 and then beginning in 2014, whether they're filing requirements or additional payments that are going to be needed. That's something that you really want to understand. Another new regulation that has been getting talked about the last couple of years that was just finalized within the last couple of months is an expensing regulation for business. And that has to do with when a business purchases equipment and assets, they're not allowed to expense it ordinarily in the current period. There's something called depreciation, where it must be staged over time. The expense or the cost recovery is staged over time. Well, there's some new rules that have come out where there's a way to categorize certain expenditures you have on your property, your building, your office, big pieces of equipment that you have. There's going to be a way for you to now expense them in full, or not expense them as you had previously done under the old rules. And once this law really takes effect with the close of the 2013 year, you're going to see there will be audits and inquiries made by the federal government to make sure that companies are in compliance. So you really want to get ahead of that as well. Make sure you have your books and records in order, and you look for any planning opportunities as well that could save you money, because every time you can generate a new expense rather than drag out an expense for money that you've spent on assets and equipment, you're going to save in the short term, and you need to know how that's going to affect your taxes today as well as 3 years from now and 5 years from now. But those are two big areas from the law that we're looking at federally. Then on the state side, the other thing that we're spending a lot of time talking to people about is something that we touched on earlier, is the internet. Selling on the internet is going to drive different tax filings and other tax payment requirements that you have. And it really depends on the type of business you are, how you deliver your services and goods, whether or not you're using outside labor or employees and your own shipping or overland shipping trucks and UPS and FedEx and the regular mails. And so there's a lot of different complicated things that go into it. But the key is just to know that the way you do business on the internet it's not a free way of doing business. You do have to look at the different costs. Lastly, I think the other thing we're spending a lot of time on is businesses who think that they can choose whether a laborer or someone that they are using to provide services, they can choose whether they're going to be an employee or an independent contractor. And unfortunately, under the law is pretty clear that there's a set of rules that you need to look at, a set of tests that you have to look at depending on what kind of business you're in and the duties that you're going to assign these individuals, whether or not you actually have an employee or an independent contractor. And the difference is that an employee, you have to pay the taxes, the payroll taxes and withholding taxes up front, whereas an independent contractor, you just pay them their rate and they're responsible for the taxes. Well, the federal and state governments are really cracking down on companies that are not following the rules because they're concerned that they're not getting enough payroll taxes for the labor force that's being employed. So we're seeing more and more audit in this area where companies are finding out that they thought that they were paying independent contractors, and the auditors have come back and said, no, you really had employees, and so now we're going to assess you for back taxes and penalties for 3 or 5 years of your labor force, and that could really be a crippling blow. So you want to, again, be aware of this and know that this is not something that you can choose. It really is dictated by the type of relationship you set up with your workforce.
One more thing that's related to that is that the exempt, non-exempt employee and overtime pay, there's a lot of auditing and a lot of penalties being levied on businesses for thinking, well, I can just classify this person. I pay them a salary so they don't get overtime. And can you talk to that, Tony?
Well, and it's funny. That has become another area that has been largely scrutinized because the states are looking for more money. And the Department of Labor of various states, they realize this is an easy way for them to come in and look at something that a company is doing incorrectly, and they will assess you and try to force you to prove them wrong. We have a lot of clients where this gets beyond just doing the tax and accounting. Often we have to bring in legal counsel because this is more of a human resource issue in many respects, is we have to understand what were the terms of the employment agreement and what hours, or maybe you had some terms in place, but the job responsibility shifted while the contract was in place, and you didn't realize that maybe they changed over from being someone who you didn't have to recognize for overtime pay to someone you did have to recognize into overtime pay. That's also going to be impacted by a lot of things that are happening with the response to Obamacare, where hours of employees may be monitored now to make someone a full-time versus a part-time employee. So these are really important issues that are complicated for most business owners and management teams. If you don't have a full-time human resource professional, then you really want to look for someone outside your company to start talking with and decide what are my hot-button issues in the employment area and what do I need to do about it, because this is really going to be an area that gets a lot of attention over the next few years.
So three takeaways from today's show. You need to be aware of where your business is doing business, how you're doing business, and the implications for that. That's number one. You need to plan. You need to forecast. You need to take time to budget and quantify the business model in terms of financials and the timing of financials. And you need to have really great providers to help you that have expertise in accounting, legal, insurance, and more, because we can't know everything we don't know till it comes up and it bites us. So we're doing an Obamacare show, a healthcare show on November 19th, and we're also going to be providing an alternative to Obamacare. It's called MediShare, and I've done the interview with the CEO, and it's actually a healthcare cost-sharing program that makes you exempt from Obamacare. So we're going to be talking about the traditional insurance and those kind of things with Tori Thomas of Forrester Insurance Agency, and then we're going to talk with Tony Meigs of MediShare and talk about that alternative that's out there. Next week, though, we're going to start laying the groundwork. We're going to start talking about business plans, budgets, why, how, when, how much. We're going to be answering all those questions in a three-part series, the first of which is next week on business planning. And Tony, I want to thank you for being here today and great information. Why don't you give everybody your website so they know how to reach out to you guys?
Sure. We're at www.langdoncpa.com.